if the thing I'm trying to protect is confidential information, then in theory, I'm only stopping you from going to jobs where you could use it. Not any job at the competition, but the kind of job that would put my information in jeopardy. So when you talk about something being overbroad, that's actually the analysis, in theory, a court is supposed to do. What is the interest you're trying to protect? How does that stack up against the restraint? Here's the thing, and this is not a criticism. A lot of non-competes floating around were written by people that don't actually litigate them. And so I would say that 90%+ of the non-competes I come across, I can take apart to one degree or another, because they were either written as a form and thrown into the middle of a set of transaction documents that then got pushed out to a bunch of employees, which is not uncommon, or two, they were just written by somebody who doesn't actually do this, and they were going off forms that they found in their firm's library, and while they're okay, they're not great. So what does that really get me? Well, if I go into court and I can show it's overbroad, several things happen. One, it is very technically void. It cannot be enforced. Two, you cannot get any damages for breaching it because it's void. And three, if the way I'm trying to enforce it is overbroad, I can trigger a fee claim from the employee. They can actually sue me for their attorney's fees. So there's several things that happen. Here's the good news. The court is mandated to reform it. Fix it. Judge, we thought our covenant was really good. Wouldn't be here in court if I didn't think it was. We're not suing on the overbroad part. They've got this hypothetical about where they couldn't take any job at the competition. That's what this says. They can't take any job at the competition. We agree that's overbroad. And if they were going over there to take any job, we wouldn't be suing. We're suing because they're going to take the exact same job. This is a one-to-one match, Judge, and our confidential information could be jeopardized. So we're only suing this narrow part. And if you think it's overbroad, which we think it's not, but if you do, you under the statute, 15.5.1c, are mandated to reform it. You've got to draw it down to reasonable. Now, very technically, you can't do that until judgment, which is called final trial. That's when you actually reform a covenant. But what a court is assessing at a preliminary injunction is, will you win at ultimate trial? And the reality is, yes, because you're required to reform it. You can't get around it. Most lawyers don't get this. Most lawyers, when you talk to them, will tell you it's overbroad, so it's not enforceable. That's exactly wrong. It's 100% enforceable. It just needs to be reformed. That is not just me talking. This is Ban Frankfurt. This is one of the post-Light cases out of our Texas Supreme Court. By the way, you can see all these are like topical headings in the paper. So if you just want to zero in on one and watch the history of this, it's in the paper. Two initial inquiries must have been made when determining whether enforceable covenant not to compete has been created under Section 15.5.0. One, is there an otherwise enforceable agreement? Two, was the covenant not to compete ancillary to or a part of that agreement at the time it was made? And in fact, this lines up with the statute. If the covenant is those things and its limitations overbroad, you must reform. Meaning, both the statute and the Supreme Court have said, if it's ancillary to or a part of an otherwise enforceable agreement, which these days is really easy to show, it is enforceable. It may just need to be fixed. And that's what you get in this little dissent, which is joined by at least two justices in Marsh, a more recent Supreme Court decision. Under the express language of the statute, only the first prong, the consideration prong, determines whether covenants are enforceable, while reasonableness defines only the extent to which they are enforceable. Therefore, the only method by which a covenant is unenforceable as a matter of law is when it is not ancillary to or part of an otherwise enforceable agreement. What does all this mean, and why are we bothering to talk about it? I have more than once, when I'm dealing with an opponent, there's often a question of should one side or the other file a deck action before actually suing. And there are strategic reasons to do this. If I'm threatening you with a covenant, and I'm threatening you with a covenant that you think I might sue in a city you're not excited about being sued in, what you might do is file a declaratory judgment action seeking a declaration that that covenant is overbroad in a jurisdiction you like better. And so this is the race to the courthouse game. You filing a deck action as the defending party also gives you an avenue to fees that you don't get if I sue first. The character of the lawsuit is decided by who files first. So if you file first, it's a deck action, and I counterclaim for a TRO. If I file first, it's a TRO, and you counterclaim for a deck action, no claim for fees under that statute. So there's this strategy around, what am I going to do here? I have had people get aggressive with me. I'm very reasonable, by the way, extremely reasonable. If you ever see me on the other side, understand two things. If I'm prosecuting, I truly believe there's irreparable harm. I truly believe I'm going to win, and I am reasonable. Now, you might think that's just a pitch. It's really true, but I will sue you. So if you decide that your best case is to go ahead and sue me first, I get it. No hard feelings. I would like a little notice, but no hard feelings. I'd do it to you, I promise. When you go do that, be sure you're careful about what you say. I've had someone say, I seek a declaration that it is unenforceable as a matter of law. I'm going to win that every single time. It's just overbroad. It's not unenforceable. It just needs to be reformed. And I will construe your declaration the way you drafted it, and I will meet your declaration with a motion for summary judgment, and I will take over this litigation. And so knowing this little bit of technicality is of huge strategic value up front and understanding the way this works. Now, I'm going to be really clear. This only really works if the trial court fully understands everything I just said, because otherwise a trial judge is like, I don't know, it seems kind of overbroad, and I seem to recall something about those being bad in Texas. I agree with the nice-looking person over here. I rule against you, Mr. Boulette, and your case is thrown out. So I'm not saying it always works, but legally, that is true. And in the bandying back and forth of sabers with opposing counsel, I go to these cases a lot. I will have counsel tell me there's no way you're going to have it enforced. I'm like, you need to read Mann Frankfurt, Marsh, and the statute. I will absolutely get it enforced. It's just a question of how much. Everybody understand this? Yes, 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 yes. All right. Next up, then, let us move along to employee non-solicitation provisions.